What up, son? It's the tale of the tapes. The fuck life. Saying? All right, we are back. This is now season 3, episode 1. So, before we get into who we're covering on today's episode, obviously just want to give a huge welcome back to everyone tuning in with us. We took an extended 14-month break from the podcast to both give some time to finish more artists, schedule upcoming episodes, gather guests for future episodes, and end this entire study on schedule. I really would like to end it at a certain time. And, you know, I think we needed this break, and we're probably going to need one more one-year break before we completely move on from this study, if I ever do, right? I mean, this may be an ongoing thing. Who the fuck knows? So, first and foremost, man, I'm super pumped to get into Season 3, the new millennium. Never has anything felt like it's been so long, yet not been long enough at all in some way. But I'm actually a lot more excited to start this season than I thought I would be. When I started this study, I wasn't overly into most of the 80s stuff, didn't know a lot of it, things like that. And I mean, listen, I knew of a lot of those artists, and yes, I had heard some of those songs, of course, but, you know, I was born in the 80s, man, so you gotta understand, I was 5 years old when it turned 1990, so again, it's just not really my era of hip-hop, so my focus and excitement was mainly for the 90s. The 90s is where I both found and fell in love with hip-hop. So, naturally, some of my fondest memories of the genre are going to be of that time period. Not only that, though, my nostalgia aside, half of the 90s is also a big chunk of the golden era of hip-hop, widely considered to be one of the greatest generations of hip-hop since its invention slash acknowledgement as its own genre. So, the 90s was definitely fun, but I won't lie, it was also super long and got a bit tedious at times. And you know, we had a bit of everything in the 90s. The first place finish, as well as the last place finish so far, obviously. So, I had mixed feelings as I got to the end of the 90s because one part of me felt relieved, and then after that died down, I was like, oh man, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, even though it seemed long while I was in it, the decade I was most excited for is now officially over. But after I took some time off and started looking at who was coming up next, it sparked some memories, and I realized that while the 90s will always hold a special place in my heart, some of my favorite hip-hop was also in the early 2000s as well, as these were my high school years. Now, I often say that my personal favorite 10-year span of hip-hop is 1995 to 2005. So, going by that, I should enjoy at least the first half of this season equally as much, if not more, than I did with the 90s. So, again, I'm really fucking pumped to get into this new millennium, and not for nothing, but on top of being excited, I'm quite curious. Was the 90s really that special? Is that it? Is it going to be super tough for anyone in any generation to pass those guys going forward? Or are we simply sleeping on the later generations? Will the new millennium do quote-unquote better overall than the 90s did? I'm not sure yet, but I honestly can't wait to find out. So with all that being said, let's officially get our third season started and kick off the first episode with our first artist of the new millennium, Dead Prez. So, typically this is where I would give my opinions and expectations on Dead Prez, but I just want to speak on some things going forward. We're in a new season here, and, you know, before I get into any of that for this group, I just want to be clear. When I talk about my opinions on these artists, I'm speaking on my personal opinions of them prior to starting this study. What I say as far as my opinions have absolutely nothing at all to do with during or after I studied these artists. I just wanted to give you guys prior opinions and expectations so we can see what I thought beforehand and then take a look at what the reality actually was when I finished them, which is what we get into later in the show, but I just didn't want anybody to misconstrue what was happening here and think that these opinions of giving, you know, before we get into these guys, are based off of me studying anything about them or their catalog. I'm actually giving you what my opinions and expectations of these people were prior to ever touching them at all in this study, prior to ever even starting this study, really, is actually what I'm telling you. So with that out of the way, allow me to speak on Dead Prez before we get into any facts and info on them. So just being the hip-hop head that I am, I had definitely heard of Dead Prez, but had probably only heard about two or three Dead Prez songs max prior to this. I couldn't tell you the group members' names or differentiate the two in a song or anything like that, so I can't really say that I had much of any expectations at all when it came to Dead Prez, as they were mainly a clean slate for me entirely. I do have to say, though, typically, when I get up to these groups like The Roots, Dead Prez, Smith & Wesson, you know, groups like that where I know I've heard the name more than once, but I'm not particularly up on their material. Generally, they tend to have something going for them, whether it's originality or skill or whatever. So, again, I didn't have a personal expectation, but more one that was created by covering what seemed to be similar groups prior to this, which was kind of that I knew they had something to offer, but can't say I really expected them to be amazing, so to speak. So, with that being said, let's officially get into our first artist of the new millennium. So, Dead Prez consists of two members, both of which made the cut. So, all the group's material as well as each artist's solo material will count. We'll start off with some facts and info on the group as a whole, and then move into each of its members individually in the order they came out and break down each one. So, Dead Prez came out together as a group in the year 2000. Their origins listed as New York City, United States. Genres are listed as hip-hop, political hip-hop, and conscious hip-hop. Years active are listed as 1996 to present, and their members are listed as Stickman and M1. So nothing really out of the ordinary there, but we do see the two group members, M1 and Stickman, listed there. And I did also just want to touch on something I brought up earlier when speaking on my expectations of this group. Considering I had heard almost nothing of them, but when I compared them to The Roots and certain groups like that, that I was well aware of, but hadn't really dove much into, I was speaking about these artists that are typically a little more underground than mainstream, yet not necessarily considered underground, but more so political or conscious hip-hop. So I just wanted to point out exactly what I was kind of hinting at when I was saying that before. But anyway, let's get into some more background info on Dead Prez. Dead Prez is an American hip-hop duo composed of Stickman and M1, formed in 1996 in New York City. They are known for their confrontational style combined with lyrics focused on both militant social justice, self-determination, and Pan-Africanism. The duo maintains an ethical stance against corporate control over the media, especially hip-hop record labels. So again, we kind of get a taste of what Dead Prez represents in their music and the stance they have and their beliefs. So let's move into each of its members. We're going to start off with M1, as he was the first of the two to have a solo album out, which came out in 2006. Birth name, Levon Alford, also known as Mutulu Alugbala, Eme Olu, and Eme Uno in Spanish. Born May 12, 1975. Origins listed as Brooklyn, New York City, United States. Genres listed as hip-hop, and his years active are listed as 1996 to present. So, I want to say I've never heard these AKAs, but I never heard of this guy's regular rap name either, so I guess not knowing the AKAs goes without saying. I just hope I didn't mess any of those difficult pronunciations up, although I'm sure I did. Nonetheless, let's check out some background info now on M1. Mutulu Alugbala, born Levon Alford, May 12, 1975, better known by his stage name M1, is an American rapper, songwriter, and activist from Brooklyn, New York. He is best known for his work as one half of the political hip-hop duo Dead Prez with Stickman. So, apparently, maybe he doesn't even have the same government name that he was born with, so I'm not 100% sure about the details behind that, but I doubt it's overly important in regards to what we're doing here. Aside from that, we don't really see anything there aside from him being a member of Dead Prez, so let's get into my breakdown of M1 and see how that reads. I must admit, I was pretty pleasantly surprised with Dead Prez as a group in general. There wasn't much room for separation as both guys were very similar both in style and talent level. M1 was decent with syllables and good with rhyme schemes in spots, but occasionally didn't rhyme or took shortcuts. He was also good at keeping a topic throughout, and the good outweighed the bad, leaving him just above average lyrically overall. M1 had a very small body of work, registering only 4 albums in total for scoring. 3 of those albums were with Dead Prez, and 1 was solo, all of which were good albums. Of his registered 50 songs, none were either weak nor great, but he did have 15 good ones. With such a small body of work, no real major mainstream commercial success for himself or the group, and the fact that to date there were no real clear visible influences on any other artists, Impact was in his best department. Both Dead Prez as a group, as well as each of its members individually, were surprisingly original, especially with their message. Although M1's technical level seemed subpar on his solo work as compared to the group albums, his originality never took a hit. So that sounds like pretty decent stuff there in general for M1, so let's take a look at the math and add up the totals. Lyrics, he gets a 5.5. Like I spoke about, you know, only 50 songs here, man. I mean, not that large of a body of work to go by. You also have to keep in mind, we're saying 50 songs, right? But only one album was a solo album. So 3/4 of his material is group album. So you gotta figure, somewhere near 35 to 40 of those songs are probably being split with Stickman, and he's probably only having one verse on there. So not only is it a low number of albums and a low number of songs, but it's a low number of verses and bars and things like that. So, you know, there wasn't all that much room for him to really climb or dip. And there was some give and take, but, you know, his ability with syllables and rhyme schemes and stuff like that outweighed any of the very minimal negative things that he was doing, and it was just enough to bring him just above average there lyrically, so he gets a 5.5 in the lyrics department. Albums, he gets a 4.46 with 0 classics. Like I spoke about, there were 4 albums, 3 group albums, 1 solo album. All 4 of those albums were good albums, so he gets a 4.46 there in the albums department. Songs, he gets a 0, like I spoke about, only 50 songs in total. No great songs, no weak songs, so he evens out and gets a 0 there in the songs department. Impact, he gets a just below average score of 4.5 here, and that's kind of based on a number of things. So, Dead Prez, probably more well known as a group than either of its members are by themselves. That's not to say that Dead Prez is overly popular as a group. Really no major mainstream commercial success, crazy amount of albums sold or anything like that. But again, you know, Dead Prez was pretty much anti that. Now, sure, you could turn around and say, oh yeah, they're anti that. They're only anti that because they don't sell records. But that's not really fair because Dead Prez came out and finished with the same message. So it's not like they came out doing some commercial shit and then because it didn't sell, it was fuck the industry. You know, I don't really think Dead Prez's goal was ever really to be majorly mainstream commercially successful and to have all these number one hit singles on the pop charts and, you know, all this random shit like that. So, yeah, you have to score for the fact of what they did, what they achieved, what they accomplished. But again, you do also have to keep in mind what their goal was. Yet and still, with no real clear visible influences on any other artist to date and stuff like that, coupled with what I just spoke about a minute ago, you know, they have to get at least under an average score. But I did think that they did enough to keep them just under average. I feel like the 4 guys are more of the guys that don't really have that kind of cult following or that underground following where they kind of just made music and they weren't really interested in going very, very far with it as far as, you know, radio mainstream commercial success is concerned. That was never really their goal. You know, whether they just like creating art or spitting bars or whatever the case is, you definitely have some people that really never had any intentions on going to that place with it. And those are more of the fours. The 3.5 and below are really going to be reserved for you, people like myself who really never had, you know, any real, for the most part, any real outings with like other hip hop artists. If they did, it was one random song. You know, maybe one of my friends did a song with Jadakiss. Another one of my friends did a song with Uncle Murder. So there's been a couple. I'm not trying to knock anybody. I'm just trying to say, you know, the 3.5 and below is really reserved for people like that who are really, really, you know, beyond underground, but not even really out there doing things the way that most of these other guys that we're covering are. So I just want to be clear why people are getting the scores they're getting in the impact department. So just below average score, 4.5 there for M1 in the impact department. And originality, he gets a 7.5. Like I said, the group as a whole was pretty original. It was mainly with their message and the content and the things that they were rapping about and stuff like that. But again, we also do have to keep into consideration that this group came out not only with a rather different message than what most people were portraying, but they stayed with that message, never deviated and never sold out. So, you know, not an overly original group or artist that was dressing ridiculously out of the norm or making songs about absolutely absurd things that nobody else was making songs about, but their message and their content in general was pretty original. It just wasn't out in left field, but it was certainly their own. And image and things like that are only part of it, right? I mean, you're going to dress how you like to dress. Whether you're copying somebody else or you're creating your own style could certainly give a vast difference in the number here and originality, at least as far as image is concerned. But I just want to be clear that just because you're not wearing some outlandish shit doesn't necessarily mean you're going to lose originality points. You're just probably not going to gain them as far as image is concerned. So you add all those five numbers up and you divide by five, and that gives you a final rating of 4.39, which leaves M1 tied for 107th place of 213 artists done overall. So as close to the middle of the pack as you could possibly get there for M1. And again, man, when you're getting below average impact scores and not finishing below the halfway point, that's pretty impressive. So props to M1 for doing his thing, man, for sure. Oh, and for the record, M1 is in a tie with Bun B of UGK, who we covered on the podcast in Season 2, the 90s. So with M1 now out of the way, let's move on to the only remaining MC in the group, Stickman, who had his debut solo album out in 2007. His birth name is Clayton Gavin, also known as Nu Muata Ibo Mustic. Born March 6, 1974 in Shadeville, Florida, United States. Origins listed as Atlanta, Georgia, United States. Genres listed as hip-hop. And his years active are also listed as 1996 to present. So similar stuff here for Stickman, although we do see both his birthplace and place of origin both listed as down south states, with Florida and Atlanta being listed. So interesting stuff there, but not much else other than that. So let's get into some additional background info on Stickman and see what else we can find out. Nu Muata Ibomu, born Clayton Gavin, March 6, 1974, better known by his stage name Stickman and more recently as Stick, is an American rapper, activist, and author known for his work as one half of the political hip-hop duo Dead Prez with M1. So very, very similar stuff there for Stickman's background as there was for M1's. Both seem to have legally changed their names. I hope I didn't butcher either one of them. My apologies if I did. And also, not really anything else there for either one specifically, other than being mentioned as being in a group with one another. So let's jump right into my synopsis of Stickman and see what I had to say. As was the case with M1 and Dead Prez in general, I was very unfamiliar with Stickman, and while I did know of the group, I had never heard of his name in particular prior to this study. The two were very similar in style and skill level and worked well as a unit together. He was decent with syllables and good with rhyme schemes, but did have times where he didn't rhyme or took shortcuts. He was, however, great at keeping a topic throughout the entirety of a song and finished above average lyrically overall. While Stickman didn't necessarily have a large body of work, it was bigger than his partners, registering 6 albums for scoring. 3 with the group, which were all good albums, and 3 solo. 2 of his 3 solo albums were great, and the remaining one was another good album. Needless to say, the fact that his quote-unquote worst projects were still good albums definitely says something. He registered 24 more songs than M1 for a total of 74. While only one of those 74 were great, not a single one was weak, and another 32 were good on top of that. One place there was no room for separation between the two was in the impact department. Again, with not a large body of work, no major mainstream commercial success for the group or himself, on top of the fact that there haven't been any real, clear, visible influences on any other artists at this point in time, Stickman didn't do any better in this department than M1. While the group as a whole, as well as each of its parts individually, were very original in both content and message, Stickman was able to take this even a step further with 2 very original concept albums entitled The Workout 1 and 2, as well as a very unique way of styling his name. So, again, some pretty positive stuff there for Stickman, which actually sounded extremely similar to M1's write-up, but possibly even better, so let's run through the numbers and see if that holds true for Stickman here. Lyrics, he gets a 6, which is an above average score. And again, the point of this episode, nor this study, is not to necessarily pin these two artists against each other per se. I understand everybody is, you know, to a certain extent being pinned against each other. But I just want to make a point that artists are not put on episodes to be pinned against each other. They just go in chronological order. These two are in a group, so obviously they're being covered together. And listen, we're going to compare because it's what we're doing here. So Stickman gets a lyrical score of 6, whereas M1 got a lyrical score of 5.5. And again, these two were very, very similar in every fashion. It was just that Stickman gave himself a little bit more room to grow. He had the 3 solo albums as compared to the 1 solo album for M1. He had the 74 songs as compared to the 50 songs for M1. So M1 was very close to getting that 6. He just didn't quite get there. And I spoke about how M1's solo material was subpar in comparison to the group material. So while I was on his last registered album debating, all right, you know, this what he does on this album is going to determine whether he stays at a 5.5 or goes to a 6, he kind of pushed himself closer to a 5.5. Whereas when Stickman came out with his solo material, he steadily used those 3 albums to climb in the right direction and eventually did hit that 6 mark lyrically. Albums, he gets a 4.84, which is about a 0.4 higher than M1 score. No classics here for Stickman either, but 2 of his 3 solo projects were great albums, whereas M1 didn't have any great albums. 4 albums for M1. All 4 of them good albums. 6 albums here for Stickman, and he does get 2 great albums in there. So his score winds up being a little bit higher at 4.84. Songs, he gets a plus 0.14. M1 got a 0, no great songs, no weak songs. Stickman, again, did have 24 more songs and 74 in total, but he did manage to register a great song on one of his solo projects and didn't register any weak songs. So that was really only 1.4% of his material, which you move the decimal point over, and Stickman gets a plus 0.14 in the songs department, a very low number, but again, you're adding to your score, right? The 0.14, the plus 0.14 is better than a 0, and a 0 is better than a minus 0.14. So again, it's not dramatic. It's probably going to make very little difference on the final score, but even if it makes a 0.01 of a difference, that could move you a slot or 2 or 3 or 4, depending on how many people are tied, right? If you got an 8-way tie in front of you, 0.01 or whatever in front of you, and you get a 0.01 added to your score, you're looking at moving up 9 spots there from a 0.01. So you know, anything could happen. Again, these are rare instances. I'm just trying to make a point where, you know, how it's obviously better to gain points if you can, especially as opposed to losing them. So neither member loses points, but Stickman the only one that's able to gain at least a little bit. Impact, he gets a 4.5, and, you know, I don't need to rehash that. It's for the exact same reason that M1 got a 4.5. Absolutely no difference whatsoever there for these guys in the Impact department. The only thing that was different at all as it relates to the Impact department was the amount of material that Stickman had. He did have more material, 2 more albums than M1 and 24 songs more than M1, but again, that's not a lot. That's not enough that it's going to propel you to getting a better Impact score. And not for nothing, but the amount of material that you put out, it has a very, it has a small effect on your Impact. So, you know, for this guy to raise his Impact score to a 5, he probably would have had to put out 15 or 20 albums in comparison to M1 only putting out 4. It would have to be really something dramatic for it to really come up mathematically on the score at the end of the day. And originality, Stickman gets an 8, whereas M1 got a 7.5. So it seems like, aside from Impact, Stickman was just a tiny, tiny little bit better in every single department than M1 was. And like I spoke about at the end of Stickman's write-up that I read, that extra half a point in the originality department was garnered by the 2 very original concept albums that Stickman came out with that were solo albums entitled The Workout 1 and The Workout 2, as well as the way that he styled his name. It's not Stickman. It's all written in lowercase letters. Nothing is capital, not the first letter of each word, nothing. It's all lowercase, S-T-I-C, period, M-A-N, all one thing, no spaces, no capitals. So again, I'm not trying to be overly ridiculous here, but it's little things like this that can make a little bit of a difference. The very slightest of differences in every single category here for these artists. So again, they were very, very similar, both in style and skill level, but just the slightest of differences, and we'll have to see how that adds up for Stickman. So you add those 5 numbers up, you divide by 5, which is the number of categories. That gives you a final rating of 4.70, which leaves Stickman tied for 78th place of 213 artists done overall. So a decent finish there for Stickman, as he lands himself just about 30 slots ahead of his partner, which actually puts him in a tie with none other than Heavy D, who we covered in Season 1, the 80s. But I did want to speak on this separation here for a sec, because this was solely based on his solo projects, really. They were both teetering on that 5.5/6 range as far as lyrics were concerned, but as they both did their solo things, M1 seemed to get closer to a 5.5, whereas Stickman really seemed to step his game up. He was much better lyrically, but it was almost as if he was set free artistically and really shined, and he was still able to keep pace with what he was doing. The lyrical content never seemed to suffer because of the concepts. So I thought Stickman really did some cool and unique stuff, which others have obviously done, but it's not always easy to combine skillful with unique. So shoutouts to Stickman and Dead Prez as a whole, no question. And I just want to point something out also here going forward, how Stickman finishes in 78th place, right? And here I come starting my follow-up sentence saying that, oh, a decent finish there for Stickman. And I'm sure some people listening are like, 78th place, that's a decent finish. But I want you guys to keep in mind that as we go forward and we have more and more artists covered, you're getting closer and closer to where these people are actually going to stay. So you're probably looking at this guy finishing somewhere inside of the top 150, give or take, because we're just about halfway through as far as number of artists is concerned here. So is that a great finish? No, it's not. But you're still in the top 150 of any human being to ever do this on planet Earth. So, I mean, is it good? Yeah, it's fucking good. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we've cut this down to 450 names, but on my list of people, you know, I got thousands of names. I probably have about 2,000 names written down. And there's got to be thousands, if not millions, of people that are out there that record hip-hop music that I will never hear of. I mean, it just is what it is. Just some things are not possible, and some people are not. You know, there's plenty of people out in California or wherever, that Texas, wherever the fuck, that have never and will never hear of me. And, you know, I mean, that's partially my fault for not really putting my stuff out there like that, but it's just not what I do. So my impact score will suffer. But, you know, back to my point, I'm just trying to make a point that the further along we get into this study, you know, some of these further back finishes, 50, 75, 100, things like that, when we get into our final season, if you're finishing in the top 100, bro, I mean, that's, you're probably going to stay right around there. You know what I'm saying? So, again, I'm going to say it's pretty impressive where you're looking at it as like, what the fuck, top? He finished 100 and we're not even done yet? It's like, oh, well, we're not done yet, but we're almost done. I mean, how many people, okay, there's 47 people left. How many of them are really going to finish in front of him? You know, like, again, I'm just being hypothetical here. I'm just trying to make a point of why I'm saying the certain things that I'm saying, whereas back in season one, if somebody finished in 48th place, I was saying, hey, you know, that's a really bad finish there, 48th place. That's because we weren't even a quarter or a fifth of the way done. So 48th place, you're looking at somebody finishing behind the 300 mark. You know, law of averages, you know what I'm saying? So with this, not so much. We're almost halfway through 78th. You're looking at that guy probably finishing about 150. So I just wanted to point that out, so everybody understands why I'm kind of using the wording I'm using and stuff like that. But this is the part of the show where I would typically run off all the lists here. And although I'm not going to do that today, I do have a couple of things to discuss. So for the most part, the show stays the same. But we have made some minor changes throughout. And that will probably continue happening for as long as the show goes on. Season one was our introductory season, and it had a bit of everything. Song breakdowns every episode, lists at the end of every episode, etc. But as we go on, even though the percentage on the lists go down, the lists are getting longer and longer. The names are becoming repetitive at this point. We're not seeing dramatic changes every week. Things like this, right? What we have done and will continue to do is implement more lists. In season one, there was probably only 2 to 3 lists. Now there's like 5, I believe, and that number will continue to grow after every break and every season. In season 2, we made a change from a song breakdown every week to only doing song breakdowns for the people who finished inside the top 10 overall. That's not going to change, at least not now or in the foreseeable future. We will still do song breakdowns for artists who finish in the top 10. And we still will run through all of our lists, just not every episode. So this season, for season 3, we are going to be adding a list of our top 3 female MCs for recognition. And we will read off all of our lists at the end of the last episode in each month. Again, these lists are all in writing on the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page. If you'd like to follow that, that's the best way to keep up with everything. Interact with the podcast, give votes and make predictions, etc. The Facebook site is www.facebook.com/Tale of the Tapes Podcast. Just give that page a like and a follow if you're interested. You can also give the host website a visit at www.anchor.fm/Tale of the Tapes. Both of those links are spelled completely normally. On the host website, you'll see a support button. I really appreciate anybody that could hit that button for me. And that's going to do it for our first episode back, moving into season 3, the new millennium. And a pretty decent start there, as both members of Dead Prez fall at least at the halfway point or higher. And I'm very curious to see how the new millennium does in comparison to the other two generations we've covered so far. So, exciting stuff. Next week on Tale of the Tapes, we'll be covering Beanie Siegel and Black Rob. So that should be a pretty interesting episode. I know that one intrigues me for more than one reason. Tale of the Tapes. Peace.
Tale of the Tapes. Might as well.